This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling.
I'm Jenny Brentis.
I'm Connor Orr.
And guys, I always send around the outline before the show, which tells us what we're going to be talking about. And I always try to give it a clever little title. Like last week was an evening of mystery, which I thought was a very intriguing way to start the show. This one is News Roundup. And I just can't think of anything more exciting than that.
Well, I think the biggest news of the week is that we allowed Gary Gramling back on the show after last week's debacle with him making Michael Badgley an X Factor, throwing the Guess Who game into chaos. Connor and I have been gracious enough to allow Gary to return. And so I just wanted to start off by saying that, you know, hopefully we can all move forward together. But, you know, we feel as though we've extended an olive branch by welcoming you back, Gary.
This is how nice of a person Jenny is afterwards. She said, do you think we were too mean to Gary? And I said, no. I mean, think about it. Michael Badgley. Like, that was just time in our lives that's never going to come back. And I'm happy for Michael Badgley because everybody deserves in their life once to be considered an X Factor. But this was not the forum to do it.
You know what, guys? We just look at this in different ways. I see myself as more as someone who sort of, I came up with an innovative new way to play the game. Like, I came up with the infield shift or something like that. And perhaps like the infield shift in baseball, it's not fun, but it's effective.
So much so that many people are accusing you of ruining everything because of that. So
pretty much. That's a legacy that I will proudly go down with.
I guess the great innovators are not appreciated in their own time. Gary, that applies to you, apparently, in your own mind, at least.
That's what I'm saying. When the kids of the next generation are playing some NFL-themed Guess Who, and there are some kickers mixed in there, they'll be able to thank me. They won't know who I am. but they should thank me. let's get to it here. We have a lot to get to. We're going to talk some Urban Meyer and some of the whispers coming out of Jacksonville, if you could term it that way. We're going to talk Jamal Adams. We're going to talk some quarterbacks who got contracts this offseason and some who didn't. And we are also we're going to turn the tables here, and this week we're going to yell at Connor. Connor is going to give us a little bit of his 272 game predictions. Not every game, but he's going to run through the records. And then Jenny and I are going to tell him when he is objectively incorrect. But we are going to start this with Jameis Winston, who is officially named the starter for the New Orleans Saints. I'm going to say at least for week one, and then we'll see how this goes, because I know the options weren't great. It was sort of two flawed options, but I don't really know if you can feel particularly good about this right now if you're a Saints fan.
Yeah, it felt like the Saints were waiting and waiting and waiting for Winston to win the job, and he didn't really until the preseason game on Monday night. Obviously, he had a very good performance that night, but also enhanced by some fantastic catches by his receivers. I mean, I didn't think Marquez Callaway came down with that ball. It was a tremendous catch. So if it had not been a catch, I don't know if we'd be viewing the performance the same way. But regardless, it took a while for Winston to win the job, despite the fact that he seemed to be the favorite going into camp. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I saw some headlines. Okay, Monday night, Winston, you know, the new successor to Drew Brees has arrived. And I feel like that's a little bit of an overstatement, but maybe you guys disagree.
No, this is not a pro, I would say, like a pro. Well, it's not a Taysom Hill pod. It's not a pro Taysom Hill pod necessarily.
Correct,
but,
correct.
But it felt very cold to me, the entire situation. Shocking with Sean Payton involved. But just watching the whole thing unfold on Monday night and listening to Louis Riddick and Brian Greasy talk about it, and they were basically inferring that throughout the week during their production meetings, Taysom Hill was increasingly frustrated, seemed to have acknowledged the fact that he was falling behind in this job. And Sean Payton kept telling the broadcast crew and Taysom Hill that, like, well, you're just too valuable just the way you are. And, you know, that kept being the sign is like, I can't sacrifice you as a quarterback because I need you in all these other places. And so they just kept repeating that and repeating that to the point where I was like, what are we doing here then? What was the point of all this? Was this ever a competition? Did he, you know, and was Jameis just so bad that they had to keep saying it was a competition until there was one day when Sean Payton could like slam the table and be like, okay, no, now it's over. He acted like a quarterback finally.
Well, that's the thing. There's definitely a practicality to saying, okay, well, we can use Taysom Hill in this other role, whereas Jameis Winston, if he's your number two quarterback, he's just, you know, he's going to be on the sideline the entire game. So there's that, but just looking at it, again, purely from what these guys have put on film in, you know, we saw Jameis for years in Tampa. He had a very limited number of snaps that he took last year, but I've written about this play. I will probably write about it again before the season starts. He played that one half against the 49ers at home when Drew Brees originally got hurt, and he was protecting a two-touchdown lead, and he threw the most Jameis-y, dangerous mistake throw, and it bounced off Jimmy Ward's chest, basically. But the issue with Jameis, and we heard all this stuff about, like, oh, you know, he had the LASIK surgery now, so now he has I don't know, X-ray vision or something like that, whatever that was being termed as. He doesn't have to squint anymore like George Costanza spotting the squirrels in Seinfeld. But yeah, he just makes these mistakes that are, I don't know how you can justify him. It's not misreads. It's not trap coverages that are fooling him. He is just simply like not seeing full grown men on the second level of the defense and just putting the ball in danger again and again and again and again. And I'm not quite sure how you can manage that. You know, you hope that maybe with a full offseason, you know, traditional training camp, maybe some of that got coached out of him. But we heard all this stuff about, like, oh, this is, you know, quarterback academy, and he's coming along so well. And then he goes out there, and it's one throw, but it's the same mistake we saw just 1,000 times in Tampa.
Yeah, and I think the vision of the field, coaches often say, is one of the hardest things to fix, or at least it's the thing where that drives coaches to the breaking point with a quarterback. You often hear, you know what, their vision is terrible, we can't fix it, like, it's over. Like, whenever a team gets to a breaking point with a quarterback and decides to go in another direction, that is often a factor, and certainly, you know, it was a factor in Tampa. Now, of course, they moved on to Tom Brady, so you could say if that didn't work out, would they have stayed with Jameis? I don't know, but I think if they did stay with Jameis and hadn't gotten Brady, I think they would have had the same reservations of, like, but we can't fix this thing that is essential to your job. So I don't know. Maybe it's fixed, maybe it's not, but there seems to be a disproportionate amount of optimism in New Orleans. I don't know. I was watching the game Monday with my mom, and she goes, but didn't this guy already have his chance? And I was like, yes, Mom, he did. Exactly.
A very long chance, longer than most people ever get as a chance.
Right, right.
And it still wasn't good. I will say that if we all hearken back to our division preview from a couple weeks ago, someone is feeling very good about his Ian Book X Factor mentions there. Ian Book got a little bit of pop on TV. I think Sean Payton may be stacking him up as his hidden sort of Tom Brady for when this inevitably explodes. But yeah, I mean, to Jenny's point, if you can't complete an extremely important function of the job, like seeing people in front of the people that you're supposed to be throwing to or anticipating that, you can't be a quarterback. And, you know, this is coming from somebody who is a terrible grammarian and still manages to collect a paycheck as a writer, as our editor Mitch knows. But, you know, I'm an outlier, and I don't think that Jameis is necessarily in that same boat there.
Yeah, I think there's a, you know, I've seen the argument, like, well, look at Ryan Tannehill, look at his turnaround in Tennessee. I think the Titans offense is much different than what Tannehill was asked to do in Miami, and not to mention just super quarterback friendly. And not that Sean Payton's offense is not quarterback friendly, but it doesn't address the issue that Jameis Winston has had. And again, maybe it clicked. Maybe this was it. Maybe having this offseason is what will ultimately make it work, and we will see Jameis Winston, who has plenty of physical tools to work with here, end up working out here. But I don't know. And again, we're not pro Taysom, and I'm not going to jump on this fascinating take that's been thrown around that Taysom is somehow the equivalent of Lamar Jackson. But you can argue you could build a poor man's Lamar Jackson type offense around Taysom Hill. He's a different kind of runner. I think Lamar is much more dangerous because of his initial quickness and overall speed, whereas Taysom is more of a physical build-up speed type of runner. And, you know, he's not where Lamar is as a passer, but you can work with those things, and we saw them work with those things. I mean, they went 3-1 with Taysom as their quarterback. Maybe not against the world beating competition at that point, but you won games against NFL teams with him.
Almost like a poor man's, like, 2015 Panthers offense, then, in that regard, right? Like, you know, like something closer to that, where you don't expect the athleticism, but you're just kind of hoping to grind out 5 or 6 yards at a time. But this situation just goes all the way back to the fallacy of, you know, people believing in draft status as if it's some sort of indicator of anything. And even years after a guy's a number one pick, there's still this coach, this part of their brain that thinks that I can fix this person and that it wasn't a mistake to draft him there in the first place, you know? And, you know, it just reminds me of, I bought a really expensive pair of pants one time, and I kept wearing them, and everyone was like, these look horrible on you. stop and they don't fit correctly, but I just kept I kept trying to push through it because it was an expensive pair of pants, and it just wasn't working for anybody, to the point where, you know, now that I look at pictures, it bothers me a lot that that period in my life occurred. But like, you have to ditch all the things that are attached with that person or the pair of pants and look at it from a more objective standpoint.
A great analogy, Connor. You know, I'm starting to worry that this show, we're just going to agree with each other on every topic. We're going to be missing the acrimony that made last week's episode memorable.
Every once in a while, you got to throw in a Michael Badgley. I think that's a lesson we learned. Well, let me ask you guys this before we move on. Will Jameis Winston start 17 games in the regular season this year, or are we going to see Taysom Hill sprinkled in at some point? Connor is holding up the
does
no.
Does it say on?
It might say no, on. It says no. I mean, that was okay. Very dramatic. That was well done, it Connor. Was.
I just am literally sitting next to a piece of paper that I wrote no on. I don't know why. And so I decided to hold it up. I was like, why not? For the YouTube.
You were ready for another game show today.
I will also say no. I mean, aside from the fact that it's difficult to start 17 games. You know, obviously this is an expanded season and all of those things. But even aside from that, I'm going to also say no, that maybe there will be a mid-season. Let's try Taysom in there and give him a spark. Or maybe it's even just the, you know, hey, Taysom's in on the first snap at quarterback, so he gets the recorded start. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, but I think it's unlikely Winston starts all 17 games.
You could do the super cold Doug Peterson, put him in for a spark and then just forget to take him out, you know, just like we were looking for a spark and then we didn't really get one. But then I just forgot you were back there, Carson. Sorry. And we're going to trade you eventually.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you gotta think, love he's it. Gonna guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's gonna guard.
He's gonna exactly. guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's gonna guard, and then on
I'm
top
not
of it.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, more coaching fun here. Urban Meyer has had something of a, I'm going to call it a rocky August, not an ideal August, and championships are not necessarily decided in August, but this is sort of his first impression on this Jaguars team. And, Pete Prisco of CBS Sports had sort of mentioned he had heard that folks there are maybe not wild about the way Urban Meyer is running things in Jacksonville to this point. But look, I've said this before, and I'll continue to say this, even when it is demonstrably wrong this season. I do think the Jaguars should be aiming for the postseason. I think when Trevor Lawrence comes in, you have just made such a monstrous upgrade to your roster. Not to mention, they added other good players, too. I think this team should be aiming for a run at a wild card spot instead of saying, well, I don't know, maybe we're 3 years away, which, I mean, what was the point of all this then?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. And it seems from the beginning, I think their draft strategy beyond Trevor Lawrence seemed off and seemed like a college coach coming in and saying, I know more than all these other people and I'm going to run it my way and I don't have to draft smartly like other people do because I'm better, and it's already not working out, and you hate to have that say that to come at the hands of an injury by somebody. But I do think that there was a general sort of misperception at how difficult this jump was going to be, to then make your second highest ranking coach also someone who's never coached in the NFL, I think was a difficult decision and an interesting decision, and then to sort of then just surround yourself with lifers who have no head coaching experience in the NFL, but have sort of always just sort of bounced around the NFL, getting another job after job. To me, it just, none of it seemed to make any sense where, you know, there is no person in here who can kind of grab the wheel when it's headed off the road. And that's kind of the direction it's headed in right now.
Yeah. I mean, to some degree, a story at some point this season that Urban Meyer needs to update his approach from college and translate it to the pros was inevitable. But you could also say that it's inevitable for a reason, and that the transition is not always the easiest one. Yeah. And Urban Meyer had a very specific way of running his college programs, and that he might be less, you know, pliable or amenable to change because of his success in the college ranks. And then, not to contradict myself, where we were just talking about, oh, Winston had a great preseason game on Monday night, but what does it really mean, the big picture? But I will say, you know, that the Jaguars' performance was eye-opening for a couple reasons. And one is just that I think I forgot about the fact that the protection is not very good. And even before Travis Etienne's season-ending injury, you could say, why were you using that pick on a running back? And we heard a lot about how the draft strategy was, he wanted five guys that were five-star recruits in high school. So he wanted guys that had this talent pipeline, kind of like the pants that Connor paid a lot of money for. but there are different team building philosophies in the NFL. And so that sounds great in theory, but then you see Trevor Lawrence not having time to do much of anything. And I think it is magnified more by the fact that the expectations are so high because the anticipation for Lawrence coming into the NFL was so great. Maybe they're not high for Jacksonville overall this season, although Gary seems to be someone high. But if you have Trevor Lawrence in your offense and it sputters, that's going to be a tremendous disappointment because this is the quarterback that all NFL teams have been waiting to see for years, right? So I think it's an interesting combination of factors in Jacksonville, and that's why perhaps it's not surprising at all to see some early angst.
Yeah, it's crazy that Gary's picking them to go to the AFC title game. I honestly can't believe it.
I did spend most of July being like, when I do my predictions, how far can I pick the Jaguars here? It turns out not very far.
Here's something. So the five-star thing blows my mind due to its stupidity in general. And because I will say that there are teams with literally the exact opposite philosophy where, you know, there are coaches in the NFL who I've heard from that say, I don't want guys who have developed physically until they were like in the middle of college. He's like, I want guys who had to figure it out in high school when they were like doughy and, you know, half the mm-hmm. size that they are now. And you develop your artistry, and then the body comes along. He's like, people are saying, that's what I want. And Urban Meyer is saying, no, get me the kid who was always famous and, you know, didn't necessarily have to work for anything. But two things on this that still drive me insane. The first, in the Monday night game, Lewis Riddick and Brian Griese were saying, oh yeah, Travis Etienne, before he got hurt, they were saying, you know, we talked to everybody this week in production meetings. He's going to be a running back. He's not a wide receiver. So we spent 4 weeks talking about how he was going to be a wide receiver and that this pick had some sort of a meaning beyond I took a first round running back, but then no, you were just going to use him as a running back. And second, how flawed is this personnel strategy and how hard is it going to be to back out of it if you need to fire this guy, right? Like, if Urban Meyer's just drafting off of rivals, you know, and stocking this thing full of, you know, frail five-star recruits, like, if you're a GM that comes in after this, it's going to kind of be like when Chris Ballard got to the Colts. It's like, whoa, like, I got some work to do here. Now, the Colts was a different situation. I think Ryan Grigson actually did have a good offensive line there, but there was some stuff that was messed up there. But, you know, there's going to be a real, like, holy crap moment there where it's going to be like, we just got a bunch of, like, really fast guys from college and we need to do a lot here to build the infrastructure.
I saw recently Urban Meyer gave Peter King of the Football Morning in America column an example that shows how he wants to be running his team in Jacksonville. And I don't know if the example showed what Meyer thought it showed. It was how Josh Allen, obviously his Josh Allen, not the Buffalo Josh Allen, was in the hospital with his wife. She'd just given birth, and there was a recommendation from the nurse regarding supplementing formula, and the wife wanted to only breastfeed. I don't know all of the specifics, but the end result was Josh Allen told Urban Meyer, which great that they have a close relationship, mm-hmm. but then Urban Meyer called the CEO of the hospital, who then apparently gave some order to the nurse to back down from her directions as a medical professional. And, you know, I think it's sort of interesting for Meyer to be trying to share with a prominent national media member that he has this influence in Jacksonville where he can call the CEO of a hospital and have them give advice to the medical professionals on behalf of his player. He also made the point that he wants his players to be able to perform at their top levels, and that means everything off the field is settled, and if he can chip in ways to make sure that's the case, then he will. And, you know, given some of the parts of Meyer's track record at Florida and Ohio State, that hasn't always been done in a way that is good for society at large. So I thought that was a somewhat strange example to illustrate. And really, all I took from that is that he's sort of exerting his power and influence in the city. And I think it all gives a little bit of an indication, perhaps, of how he views himself, how he views his authority and the sway that he pulls. And that's not always a great thing in an NFL locker room with a team of professionals.
It's not always a great thing in a lot of places. That is wild.
Truly horrifying stuff. When my son was born and the nurse said, you have to wear a mask, I said, let me call Gary Gramling. you need to talk to Gary Gramling first, because I don't believe you. No, this Oof. Is always listen to your nurses, please. They've been through more than you can possibly imagine, and they're right 99% of the time.
I mean, I think in Gary's case, because he's not appreciated in his own time, he probably couldn't get the CEO of the hospital on the phone, Connor. So that was probably a fruitless call that you placed.
Why is the Michael Badgley guy calling me? I just hang up.
We hadn't done the podcast episode at that point, but he knew what was coming.
Hey, but I will say though, Michael Badgley, who I did a feature on a few years ago, really enjoyed covering the guy. Like, this is nothing personal, it's just become a bit. I just want to make that clear. But Michael Badgley is from New Jersey, went to Summit High School. So Connor, I know that you live generally in that area. So it's possible that your nurse could have been somebody who knows Michael Badgley and would appreciate the fact that Gary has really taken up for, well, has made him into an X Factor, shall we say.
It all comes full circle.
Yep.
Let me put you on the phone with someone who thinks Michael Badgley is an X Factor. Does that do anything for you?
Yeah. So Gary does. Maybe Gary, you know what? There are people who appreciate you.
Thank you. I'm glad we're all coming around in literally the most bizarre way possible to Michael Badgley in the game of Guess Who that we played on the podcast a week ago. All right, we'll be back in 1 second. We got to talk guys who got paid, guys who didn't get paid, and yes, we still have to yell at Connor about his 272 predictions.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, so we have plenty of show left here, and we're going to talk a little bit about the guys who got contracts this offseason and some of the guys who didn't quite get contracts this offseason. And we're still kind of in a stage where a lot of NFL teams are kind of, you know, given the, oh, well, we had the COVID year, and we don't have as much money, so we can't really spend right now type of thing. But Jamal Adams is a guy who ended up getting his contract. And I just thought it was, I think he's a fascinating player. I think it's a really strange situation he is in with that defense. And I was kind of wondering how the Seahawks would approach this after what was a first season in Seattle that's had some highs, but also had quite a few lows.
Yeah, and I think if you trade for a player and you give up quality draft capital, and as part of that trade, you don't agree to an extension with the player, then you're setting up a situation for a year from now, or for a year from the trade, which is a situation the Seahawks were in with Adams this summer, where you almost have to give the player a contract extension, or at least the player has a lot more leverage, right? Because you say, well, we gave up a lot, and let me give him the contract extension because we already gave up a lot. So in a sense, Adams did have leverage as a result of that. But I know what you're going to say, Gary. You're going to say that that is a fallacy.
I think it might be a little bit of sunk cost fallacy. But they also they have to figure out what they want to do with him. I don't know. As far as the Seahawks defense goes, so you have Jamal Adams, who is a box safety, some might say more of a linebacker at this point. And you already have a team that has, I mean, they've invested heavily at linebacker. They have Bobby Wagner. They have Jennie's, guess who, mystery man, Jordan Brooks from
last
week.
That's right.
So they have invested in linebackers. You are essentially going to have, in a lot of instances, three linebackers on the field. Although maybe in that division at this point in time, I mean, you've written about this, Connor. Maybe you need a little more size up front.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the NFL is shifting again, and so I think you're going to start to see some of those hybrid players go by the wayside. They had a nice, like, 5 or 6 year window there, but I think we're going back to big people a little bit, not to make fun of Dave Gettleman, but he was right all along, perhaps. You know, it's interesting, though, that if there are a few GMs who could probably get away with trading for that player, realizing he didn't work out, and then cutting bait for less. And John Schneider is one of them, right? You've already won a Super Bowl. You're universally viewed as one of the best drafters in the NFL. You created a generational talent defense out of fifth round picks. You're going to be okay, you know? And you can kind of say, well, we tried and didn't work out, and you don't have to keep forcing this square peg into a round hole. But instead, I think you're just going to keep making Pete Carroll's defense weirder and less good, you know? And it seems like that is the plan, and let's pay him a lot of money to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of like the pants analogy again, Connor, you know? You keep wearing the pants even though they're not the right fit because you paid a lot of money for them.
You at one point saw these pants. I bought them from Banana Republic, and it was when Mad Men was really kind of in full swing, and they were gray, but they had a lot of stripes on them, you know, like too many stripes for pants. Were not super visible. Like, you'd have to get up and look at them, which thankfully no one ever did. But like, you'd have to like look at them to see the pattern of the stripes. But it was that very like 50s, 60s kind of pants. Uh-huh. But then, you know, tried to make them fit in a way that was a little bit cooler. And yeah, it's just a period of my life that I want back, you know, not the part where I got to see you every day. That was great. It was just the pants. Specifically,
if it's any consolation, I don't have a clear memory of these pants, so they weren't good. So egregiously bad that I would recall it, but
good.
Yeah, I think you said my point better than I did, Connor. It takes a lot of courage essentially to trade for Adams, give up that draft capital, and then not to sign him to an extension. And the Seahawks obviously didn't go that path, but now they have signed him to an extension, and we're still not sure if it's the right fit for the defense.
That's the thing. It's like when you saw him out there last year, it seems clear that they sort of did not correctly assess his ability in coverage, and opponents took advantage of that. I mean, teams found ways to basically get him singled up on receivers, and whether it was a Cooper Kupp or a Stephon Diggs, those are guys who any safety is going to have trouble covering, but he just struggled to cover any wide receiver out there, which is that's tough to have a defensive back on the field who is that much of a liability at that point. So look, they had an entire offseason to figure out how they can make this work. The way they did it late last season was blitzing a lot, which led to big sack numbers. But I think Greg Cassell, I saw it pointed this out, their performance when Jamal Adams blitzed on like a per play basis was really not good for the Seahawks. So you ended up with a guy who sort of ended up, you know, he had a ton of sacks. I should be able to look at the number because I have a computer and internet access, but I won't right now. But he had a lot of sacks is the point. But overall, it was not a good thing when he was blitzing that much. And not to mention, you now have every team knows when he's on the field, okay, well, if he's going to stay in coverage, that's good news for us. And then he's probably going to come and blitz, and, you know, we'll be ready for it now.
He had 9.5 sacks last season.
Very good. Very good.
We can just call this from now on, just say Pete Carroll's wearing them pants, you know, like he's wearing them pants.
I really hope this catches on. I just hope there's a day when some coach or GM opens a press availability by just saying, have you ever heard about Connor Orr's pants? and then just goes in to explain maybe a misstep that they had taken. But yeah.
Yeah, it's really versatile. It can work for quarterbacks. It can work for safeties. Just
it was a real Oracle pants moment. No, that doesn't work. Now I'm combining too many brands here. Connor Orr's pants is what it will be known as.
Just to support your theory even further, I think, well, Jamal Adams' net yards over average is a fun thing to play around with on NFL statistics, and you know, they were at times very much better with him not on the field, which didn't happen a lot, but you know,
yeah,
also worth noting.
So interesting.
How were they with Jordan Brooks, my X factor, on the field?
Ooh.
Mm. So Jenny, actually, I have this up. The second highest player in terms of net yards over average, Jordan Brooks, last year for the Seattle Seahawks. So, how about this? When he was in the game, average rush against the Seahawks, 3.3 yards. When he was out of the game, almost 3.9 yards. Let's see here. Average pass, when he was in the game, 5.9 yards. When he was out, 6.4. So,
Connor, you know what that is? That's a real X factor.
That is...
It is. Can he kick, though? I don't know.
Can he play
we'll
safety?
Find out. Yeah. All right. The quarterback situation here. We know Josh Allen got paid, and we kind of wondered if there would be a domino effect when it comes to Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield. Obviously, Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen will not be getting contract extensions this summer, but Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield to this point have not gotten their second contracts, and I don't know. Let's start with Lamar because this one is the more annoying conversation, so we'll get this out of the way. But you know, there's, I don't know, for a third consecutive offseason, there's sort of this talk of, well, this, you know, I think the NFL might figure out Lamar this year, and I'm open to the fact that there's some truth to, you know, overall it is easier to figure out a way to stop a run centric team because a lot of it is based in misdirection than it is to figure out a team with an expansive infinite number of options in the passing game, which the Ravens might have been able to expand this year, but all their, you know, Rashad Bateman's out for a while. They just have the same problems with their outside receivers that they've seemingly had for the last couple of seasons. But you know, the question becomes, like, when you step back, is Lamar Jackson a top of the market quarterback at this point, in the same way that Patrick Mahomes was, and you know, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, the last couple of contracts here?
I think until you ask him to be, and to your point, provide him the tools to do so, you can't know that for sure, right? And everyone's always saying, you know, and there are good tools out there. There's like, look at the QB heat map, like, right? He doesn't throw deep. He doesn't throw to the sidelines. But like, he only has one receiver, and a majority of their passing game flows through their tight ends, because that was a great market inefficiency that the Ravens capitalized on, and that's why they got so good so fast. But then, you know, everything kind of hit a stalling point. And I hate the idea that, like, you would never say that, oh, well, the NFL's figuring out Josh Allen. You would say, fire the offensive coordinator, right? You know, and what the NFL is doing is not figuring out Lamar Jackson. They've just watched a lot of film, and they realize, okay, they tend to give the ball in these situations when they're in this formation, and they tend to keep the ball in these situations. That's on Greg Roman. You have to change that. You have to add wrinkles to the system to make your player better, because all you're asking Lamar to run the offense, and I think is still doing it very wonderfully as presented to him. However, unless you give him the players to throw to deep and outside, and unless you put in the formations and the plays and all that different components of the offense to do that, then I don't see how we can say that he's not a $45 million a year player, because he very may well be.
Yeah, I think that's a great analysis, Connor. Last year's offense didn't have the next jump that we hoped it would. And in this case, all of that has been pinned on Lamar, which is unfair because there are a lot of parts of an offense. There's a play caller. There's, you know, what talent do you have at the receiver position? They didn't have the right talent at the receiver position, right? So there was so much focus on, well, the deep passing game needs to come alive and throws outside the numbers. And certainly those were areas that Jackson was focusing on and wanted to get better at and needed to improve at, like any quarterback has areas that he needed to improve at. But that became the only metric, essentially, that we were judging his performance and progress by. And there are a lot of reasons why an offense wouldn't, you know, become better in a specific area, especially in a weird offseason last year where you weren't having a lot of time to work one-on-one with your receivers. They didn't have the personnel to sort of match that expected change or development. And so I think a lot of those assessments have been pretty unfair. But as for the contract, I think they will re-sign him. I think both he and the team want him to be there long-term. One strange factor, though, is that he is his own agent. And okay, that's a fine route to go, but that does sort of make things a little bit more complicated if you're trying to negotiate during training camp or during the season. Those are times when it is nice to have an agent to be handling that, because as a quarterback, that's not really something you have the extra time to do during the regular season.
No, that is a great point. And I just want to add real quick to their performance last year. One reason they sort of slid back, I mean, they slid back. I'm not arguing otherwise, but they were also really, really good in 2019. But part of the reason they slid back is their red zone efficiency fell from top of the league to middle of the pack. They were second in 2019. They were 12th in 2021. And a lot of that was the result of just weird turnovers in goal-to-go situations, which is, I just don't think that's something that you can say, well, they'll probably lose five fumbles inside the opponent's 10 this year, and you got to factor that in. No, I mean, that some of that is just kind of luck at that point. I mean, Gus Edwards coughs it up on the goal line. That's life. That's the way it goes. And the other thing I'll bring up, as well as the fact, I mean, look, they need like a big contested catch guy on the outside. They don't have that. Maybe Rashad Bateman was going to be that, but we don't know. And if he is going to become that, it probably won't be until like the second half of this season. But as far as Lamar as a runner, I think this whole part of, okay, well, you know, we'll figure it out, we'll get their tendencies. I think Lamar is a guy who is just, he's better than what you can figure out. Like, you can't,
right?
You can't prepare for his initial quickness is like nothing, certainly nothing I've ever seen from a quarterback. I think you could argue it might be like league best at any position at this point. I mean, it is absolutely special. And to say, you know, you can win. You can figure it out. You can beat them schematically, and Lamar can still pull out a big play. And that is something you can't prepare for. It's kind of like when everyone knew Adrian Peterson was going to, you know, 2014, that, you know, oh, they're going to give the ball to Adrian Peterson. Well, he's still going to run over a bunch of people and then break away and pick up another 25 yards before you drag him down. And it's a different style, but it's sort of the same problem. It's just a guy who he can break you even when you get it right.
Well put, Gary. I think that's the best kind of thing that you can say about Lamar Jackson, because otherwise, it's just left to the, you know, Bill Polians of the world to establish this narrative that he has not shown us some nebulous thing, you know, when he's actually overperforming given the circumstances.
Baker Mayfield also has not gotten his second contract. I think you have to take this one, Connor. You are the resident Browns expert at this point.
Yes, and our friends, our listeners at Pick Preak in Norway had me on their podcast, and they're friends of the show. I made my Browns Super Bowl prediction public on a Norwegian platform, obviously, because that's where you would go to do that. And I think Baker Mayfield is just going to do I think he's going to take them to the Super Bowl and he's going to get paid after the season. I think he's a guy that thrives on this kind of stuff. I think they know that. I think that they're, kind of rubbing his nose in it a little bit, like the Packers maybe drafting Jordan Love, and they're going to squeeze all the toothpaste out of the tube, you know? And then afterwards, they'll be fine paying him because who cares? You made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I totally agree. This seems like the exact kind of situation that he would thrive in. And they go to the playoffs last year, and this long drought, expectations are high this year, and you can just see him taking a gamble and saying, you know what? My leverage is going to be greater next year if I have an awesome season. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to do that. And I'm going to, prove anyone who thinks that I might be the reason holding the team back, I'm going to prove them wrong. But I have a slight bone to pick, Connor. I'm pretty sure you first made your Browns to the Super Bowl pick on this podcast. Is that not right, Gary?
You're true. Yeah, that's right.
I think you didn't intend to. I think it just came out. And I guess I'm wondering, are you just like sticking with that take because you were so early on it? Or do you actually believe it?
I think that I had waited my entire life to have an experience like that where your consciousness speaks louder than, just your whatever you want to call it, your human mind, And so I felt that was divinity. That was beyond like a normal experience. And so I have no choice but to continue to pick the Browns to go to the Super Bowl. This feels like something that feels like something that came from not on this earth,
Okay, now you're proselytizing, all around the world. Great.
What could go wrong?
Cases speaking in tongues a little bit, and now look where we are. I think we're all in agreement that Baker is the long-term guy one way or another in Cleveland. And again, I think I mentioned this when we did the AFC North show. I jumped off the Baker bandwagon October, November last year. If you go back and watch those games, so many of them were in monsoon conditions where no one threw the ball well. They played games in just absurd weather. And I think that really, he had one really ugly performance when they lost in Pittsburgh early in the year that sort of took the shine off their fast start. But I thought he played really well down the stretch. I thought he even played a very good game. I can say a great game, but a very good game in the loss to the Chiefs, even though a lot of people were kind of trying to put that on him a little bit. I think they just ran out of players against a team that's just better than them, better than everyone in the AFC. So
I agree.
Do you, though? But you just picked the Browns to win the Super Bowl. So you don't think the Chiefs are better than the Browns?
Well, I don't know if the Chiefs are going to be there,
I see.
Ooh.
Okay. Nice.
Tease the 272. Tease the 272.
Okay. Well, yes, yeah. I did notice this. I'm glad that you referenced this because that one really jumped out to me.
Mm-hmm.
This pick of yours. So.
All right. Before we get to Connor's 272, where we're just going to, we are going to just lambast you. This is going to be ugly. So much
very
anger.
Excited.
Are we though, Gary?
I don't know.
I think a problem with this show is that Connor and I have known each other longer than mm-hmm. either of us have known you. So generally we end up, on the same side of things at times. And I do feel like a little bit two against ones. So I'm trying to acknowledge this and saying that I see it happening, but I still don't know that I'm going to come at Connor. I actually kind of liked some of his picks.
There was just so much heat off of Michael Badgley last week that I'm hoping this gets turned around. I can't wait to just scream at you for that Falcons 7-10 pick.
You never know what's going to touch a nerve, You just have to let it go. This is an open forum for everybody. So
Before we get to that, a couple of quick programming notes. We'll have our preview and predictions extravaganza next week. That's going to be a very special show. You won't want to miss that. And then after that, we're somehow going to have a show that is even more special. The Friday after the season opener, we're going to break down what happens in Bucks Cowboys. We're going to wait until probably after the game to tape that show. Or I don't know if you guys want to do like a series. We'll tape like 8 different versions where we cover every possibility. The one where, I don't know, Ben DiNucci throws 4 touchdown passes and punches Tom Brady in the crotch to celebrate. That'll be good.
That's what I was going to say, because Thursday's like a work day for me. Friday, I do like to, you know, get a little R&R in. So, you know, even if we have to tape 8 episodes on Thursday, then Friday we can still all kind of relax. That would be good for me.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We also, okay, well, this is where I'll get my revenge. I don't know anything about this, so I'm just going to read it kind of phonetically. Mitch Goldish is our fellow colleague at the MMQB is calling out Connor for his guess who claim that Bernard is the only guy who has a beard. Mitch points out that Charles also has a beard, and that was my Mitch impression too. Sounds a lot like me and just a very stunted speech pattern, but yeah, it's you were wrong, Connor.
Richard
Oh, it's Richard. Okay. Richard. Well, then now I was wrong too. So
I think that Bernard doesn't even have a beard at all. I'm looking at the Guess Who board, and it appears as though Bernard does not have a beard. So we felt that it was necessary to issue a correction. As an institution of journalism, we try to be factually accurate, and in this case, we have fallen short.
Wow. Richard was the one with the beard, and Philip and David, there are three beards. Wow. Holy crap, I'm looking at it right now. Man. Bernard didn't have a beard. He was a very sullen-looking man with a sort of Soviet cap on.
Yeah, like, is that a fez? Is that what they call that?
But without the decorations on it, just sort of maybe his fez had, like, fallen in the street and gotten wet and he lost the feather, you know? I don't know. But he still wears it, you know?
Okay. All right. Well, there we go. I don't know anything about Guess Who. I don't have anything to add to that.
As always, I just appreciate Mitch's careful auditing of all content that I put out in the world.
And we do have to give a quick shout out to Brian Murray, who sent in some Family Feud analytics that he had compiled over the years here. As far as we discussed it briefly, but I think it is an important discussion, and maybe we'll devote a show or maybe a series to it at some point. But basically, do you pass or play when you get the board in Family Feud? And I think most people would play, but there's a school of thought that you should pass. And Brian sort of broke it down based on how many answers are on the board. One important thing that I hadn't factored in, did one or two answers come off the board during the face-off? So a lot of stuff to consider here.
Fascinating stuff. Helped me win an long-standing argument with my spouse and my in-laws, who are all big Family Feud fans. Maybe we can one day get Steve Harvey on the show to talk some NFL, by the way. Just
That's
an idea.
Good. Yeah. Okay. Here we go, Connor. You have done your predict every game of the regular season, 272 games, every team's record. We are going to do this somewhat rapid fire, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, so
sure.
I was thinking I could just, I'm going to start at the top, I'm going to read the records, and then as some of our Weak Side podcast listeners are familiar with, we have the Frentis consensus. Jenny can lay it down, and she can object, and so Jenny or Gary, if you just have an objection, you can just yell, objection. The initial thought here was to just sort of read the records in the tune of "We Didn't Start the Fire" by Billy Joel, and see how far we get before everyone has a problem. So I can start at the beginning of the AFC East, and we can roll from there.
All right.
Go. Okay. Buffalo. Buffalo 12-5. No, I'm not going to do
that. I want to lodge an objection.
Is it my singing?
You know, I need to also correct myself. A few minutes ago, I was like, it can often be Connor and me against Gary, but really, it's just the two of you laughing at jokes that I don't get and me sitting here staring off into the abyss. So I don't know what I was saying, but in any event.
Oh,
glad you guys
man.
Have the same sense of humor. I did lodge an objection to the Bills at 12-5. I don't think they'll win 12 games.
I like this.
Right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Sorry.
I was going to save mine.
Okay.
Also, I mean, Shelby Royson, our producer, had the Law and Order dung lined up there. So
it's really well done.
Yeah.
Shelby is always at the ready with clever sound effects.
I agree with you, Jenny. So here's what's interesting. Like, there is such an element of fear in not picking the Bills to win the AFC East that, like, I was like, not bullied, but like, bothered throughout the season by this. And so I was just like, you know what? Here's your thing. But I have the New England Patriots at 11-6 as sort of a way at like, it's sort of a hidden cry for help. Like, I really believe in you, New England, but I'm scared of these people over here.
Okay.
You know?
What a statement, though, to say that you felt compelled or scared not to pick the Bills winning the AFC East. That is quite a statement, Connor. That would not have been said since the late 90s.
So
mid 90s.
When
Early 90s? I'm really messing up the dates here. Early 90s. Early 90s. Let's just correct me, all right?
I spent some time doing some various, market radio interviews when this thing came out, because everyone's like, oh, you're wrong, let's have you on the show. And spent so much time trying to validate the process, where someone, for example, was like, how could you possibly have the 49ers losing to the Vikings? And I said, well, good question, because the Vikings play another team that runs the same system as them twice a year, and they upgraded their defensive tackles, which is one way to slow down the outside zone. Like, oh, we didn't know that much thought went into it. Yes. However, I'm also just really scared of Bills fans. And like, so this is the blend, right? There is some science here, and then there is some just real visceral fear. And so, you know, you combine the two of those, and that is the secret Big Mac sauce.
All right. Shall we continue?
Yeah, let's go. So we have Patriots at 11-6 in second place, Dolphins at 9-8 in third place, and the Jets at 5-12 in fourth. And that was before the loss and injury. So, you know, maybe some downward flexibility there. In the AFC North, the future Super Bowl contending Cleveland Browns in first place at 12-5. The Ravens.
I'll log the objection. I don't feel good about it, but I don't think they're. I think the Browns are missing the playoffs this year.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah. That's
no. Hot. I think they're third place in that division.
Oh yes. Well, you have to back this up now. You can't just
So, look, we talked about the Ravens. We know what the Ravens are defensively. I think their red zone luck sort of moves back toward what it should be, which makes them one of the best red zone teams in the league. And I think that's the difference offensively. But there's just this, I talked about a little bit last week when we did our long shot Super Bowl picks. There's just this sense with Ben Roethlisberger that, like, he is, I don't know, it's like he's Luke Falk or something, and it's like, he's not Ben Roethlisberger circa 2008, but you can, when they need to throw the ball downfield, they did last year. They did it when they had to come back and beat the Colts. They did it in the Browns, they lost the Browns game because they dug themselves such a huge hole there, but I think that offense is going to be fine. I think it's going to be a decent offense. I think it's going to be a great defense, and I think that's a second tier contender in the AFC. And when it comes to the Browns, the thing that makes me nervous about the Browns is so many new pieces on defense. I think it does take a year for those pieces to mesh and sort of become the sum of their parts. I think the Browns are definitely Super Bowl 57 champions, but to say they're Super Bowl 56 champions, it's just, no, not a chance.
How do we feel about a gentleman's wager on this? I will say you and I have both voiced our difficulties in trying to grow grass in our front yards. So loser of this, Browns either make the playoffs or because you have them out of the playoffs, correct?
Well, hold on here.
Yeah.
It's out of the playoffs or it's Super Bowl.
Right.
So, there's a vast middle ground there, which correct. I would like to occupy just because, I would like to be in on this.
Okay. So, so if they occupy, Jenny's taking the middle ground.
I just wanted to muck things up. You guys can continue with your
wager. No. Gary gets out of the playoffs and I get Super Bowl. I feel strongly about this. What do we say that we, I was initially going to propose that Gary come over and try to grow grass in my front yard. I don't know how to do it.
I ripped up and reseeded my entire lawn in the 48 hours before my first child was born because I was already on paternity leave and didn't know what else to do with myself. Yeah, I'll do that. I'll sign up for that. I'm not going to let you touch my lawn if I win, but I'll find some other chore.
I'll do it anyway.
Chore for you.
I'll do it anyway.
chasing you off my property.
Okay, so just to wrap up, whoever wins gets to destroy the other person's lawn, and we'll be all set. So what can go wrong? To the AFC South, Titans at 11-6.
No, hang on a second. We need the rest of the AFC North.
Oh, I didn't give you the rest of the AFC North.
No.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, because the Browns hate was so strong, I just like kind of got lost there. Ravens at 11-6, second place. The Steelers at 9-8 in third place, and the Bengals at 3-14 in dead last. You know.
Yeah.
I could not find wins for the Bengals on this schedule. Like, just I could not find them anywhere.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. And I do object to the Steelers, by the way, but we already covered that. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I think they'll get more than 9 wins, but we did already cover that. So.
All right. So to the AFC South, we have the Titans at 11-6, the Colts at 10-7. Including a stunning 5-game losing streak to start the season, and
Whoa.
Then a followed by a 5-game winning streak. So a wild,
nice.
Wild season in Indianapolis that will never happen that way. The Jaguars at 7-10 in third place, and the
Jacked.
Oh,
hey, are you on the high side or the high side or low side?
Low side of 7.
Yes. Okay, I
Man,
love it.
I almost objected and said, like, they're going to win 10 games. But I don't even believe that anymore.
Make this take so hot that you're going to say that they're going to finish below the Texans. Just do it. Just do it. Just
no,
do it.
Sorry, Connor. I can't do that. You know me. I'm the lukewarm takes, tea perfect drinking temperature.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Just
I'm
right.
Not going to say they're going to go below the Texans, but I think they'll win less than 7.
Just right. Okay. So Jaguars 7-10, possibly less. And the Texans at 1-16 only, with a season finale win over the Titans, who at that point presumably would be resting their players for the playoffs.
Wow. Okay.
Nice. Beating like the Zach Mettenberger Titans or whatever.
Right.
It is.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, that's another team that I just cannot find a win on their schedule. You know, maybe I could actually see them beating the Jaguars week one. You know, but after that, maybe Carolina. But other than that, it gets pretty meager here. The Jets would be the other one, obviously, that they could probably like, you know, squeeze a win out of, but I just don't see it. So I'm prepared to be objected here. We have the AFC West, the Chiefs at 12-5. Nothing.
I'm going to allow it.
All right. The Chargers in second place at 11-6. Nothing. Wow. I thought that was going to be
I could
be
see
objected.
The Chiefs being a little higher than 12 wins, but I'm not going to object because I don't think it's like very egregious.
Okay. Okay. The Broncos in third place at 9-8, and the Raiders in last at 6-11. Gary, I know the Raiders have Yannick Ngakoue, so I'll give you a chance to voice your displeasure there.
I mean, are you projecting Yannick Ngakoue to miss 11 games this season? He never misses games.
Oh, okay, good. So I feel okay about the AFC. The AFC West. Okay, to the NFC East we go. Giants, 10-7, first place in the NFC
yeah,
East.
Yeah, I'm with that. Yep.
Cowboys, second place at 9-8. Washington football team in third at 8-9. And Eagles in fourth place at 5-12.
I'm actually going to give a slightly hot take here, Connor. I think that you may have gotten this division exactly right. Like,
Woo!
I could see us ending the season with having those four teams at exactly those win totals.
However,
yeah.
I will say, Eagles-Jets joint practices this week, which I was lucky enough to attend, ran into astute Eagles beat writer Zach Berman, who said that the Eagles' ceiling might be a little bit higher than we think this year. So,
okay.
Who knows? Pass rush is very good. Jalen Hurts not looking bad, but perhaps they're going to make us all look a little bit silly. Although it could have just been the Eagles making the Jets defense look silly, which I think a lot of people will end up doing just because they don't have any players. NFC North, Packers in first place at 12-5. Bears, second place, 7-10.
Oh.
Vikings, third place, 7-10.
No, object
Lions,
to that.
Lions, fourth, 4-13. What do you object to?
Vikings are, I think, worst case, I think Vikings are a 9-8 team. I mean, if you're you're projecting Kirk Cousins to miss multiple games because of COVID protocols, maybe that changes it. But yeah, I think that's just it's a good team. It is. It's a good team, and the fact that I think getting Danielle Hunter back is just such a difference maker for that defense, especially with the secondary getting, you know, young secondary getting a little bit better. I think that's probably a 10-win team. I think it's at least a 9-8 team.
And you could get them to 9-8 with Connor's charts if you gave them another win against Detroit and a win against Carolina, which seem realistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed.
I have to say, though, I'm still struggling to orient with these new 17 win totals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so long we know exactly what 6-10 represents and what 8-8 represents, 10-6, and it's just going to take a little bit getting used to.
And very astute, Gary, you noticed that the Vikings were on a losing streak there, week 14, 15, 16, 17, right in the height of flu season. So who knows what's going to happen? Just kidding. but NFC South, that's not why I did that, but it's funny that it worked out that way. NFC South, Buccaneers in first place at 12-5. The Saints in second place, 7-10. Falcons, third place, 7-10. Panthers, fourth place, 4-13.
I'll object to the Saints. Thank you, Shelby. I know we were just sort of talking about Jameis and the issues there. I just think between Jameis and Taysom, there's an answer to be found offensively, and I think that Saints team as a whole is good enough to win 10 games this year. I guess I'm projecting everyone to win 10 games when it boils down to it.
Yeah. So to be clear, this is the parallel universe where the Cowboys don't win, Mike McCarthy gets fired, and Sean Payton leaves the Saints after this year because Drew Brees isn't there anymore.
Okay.
Because quarterback right. Whispers also incidentally need good quarterbacks, as Jenny also pointed out.
Yep.
I have a feeling I'm going to get super objected here. Well, vaguely objected, but let's see how this works out. NFC West, close it out. Rams, first place, 12-5.
Yeah.
I mean, the offseason addition of MMQB staffer Andy Benoit, too hard to ignore there. So actually, poured some rocket fuel on
their
win-loss total.
Maybe 17-0 here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that would be my only objection, but
yeah.
Let's keep going.
Seahawks in second place, 12-5.
Oh, yeah, do the next one.
49ers in third place, 11-6.
Okay.
And the Cardinals in last, 6-11.
I pick against. I'll say object so we can play the noise one more time. I'll object. I've been picking against the Seahawks like every year for the last 3 years, so maybe I should have learned my lesson at this point. I don't think that team is good enough defensively to carry them in that division. I'm bullish on Shane Waldron running that offense. I think he'll find better answers with Russell Wilson than the last couple coordinators did, but I just think that a defense is teams are going to outscore them when it's all said and done.
I agree in theory. However, look at their schedule, right? You start off the season with Indianapolis. They may or may not have Carson Wentz. You have Tennessee, who I have them losing to. Minnesota, who I think, regardless, they're better than. I have them losing to the 49ers. And then if you kind of skip along here, I think I have them splitting with the Rams, which, I think they are capable of doing. They're beating Pittsburgh. I mean, I know you're unreasonably high on the Steelers, and so there's there's something there. And I even gave them a loss to the Saints just to kind of make them not 13-4, and the fluke loss to the Jaguars because Darrell Bevell comes back. He knows Pete Carroll, and maybe they squeeze out some weird schematic victory there. But after that, I mean, okay, maybe they lose to the Packers. I had them beating the Packers, and maybe they lose that game. But even then, okay, that's 11-6. They're going to beat the Cardinals. They're not going to lose to Washington. They're not going to lose to the Texans. They're not going to lose to the Bears, the Lions, the Cardinals again. I mean, this schedule is not a murderer's row either,
See, I think they're going to lose to the Vikings. I think they're going to lose to the I think they're going to lose to the Colts in the opener.
For those who listened to all the episodes with Mad Libs where there was a prompt for a noise that Gary would make when he was dissatisfied with something, that was the noise he just gave that we were trying to give.
It's a shorter one. It's a
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, there's a chance Gary is right, just like there is a chance that we'll all be hit by a comet before the season starts. So maybe the Vikings and the Steelers will actually be good this year. So you never know. There we go.
Well, we'll have the full preview and prediction next week. I think I'm going to predict like a Vikings, Steelers, Jaguars tri Super Bowl. All three teams will somehow do it on some sort of 3D field.
Now, I have to say, Connor, 49ers at 11-6, that's bold. You also got a lot of backlash for your Colts pick, but I didn't see anything wrong with your Colts pick. Neither Gary nor I objected.
Did people object to the Colts pick because it was too low or too high?
Too low. And also the mechanism by which we got there, which... So let's let everybody in a little bit on the secret sauce here. I picked this thing by putting down tallies. So I had each team on a piece of paper and then a W and an L. And I went through the schedule and I tallied all the things because I didn't want to look at the record until afterwards. And I didn't want it to influence anything. So I got it done, wrote everything, turned it in. Editor Mitch says, change of plans. We need every single game, game by game. And so then you have to go back a second time and try to remember which wins and losses. And then basically we had to erase the whole thing and then go back and do it from the beginning. And so I don't know if I realized that the Colts were going to lose those first five games. I don't know if I had them down, but that's just kind of how I made the 10-7 work eventually. Like sometimes we had to fit stuff together because the AFC records were already printed in the magazine. You know, you have to kind of like wiggle them in a little bit. But I still believe that like that first five games, they're brutal. I can pull it up right here, but like, So with or without Carson Wentz, you have the Seahawks, the Rams, at the Titans, at the Dolphins, at the Ravens. That's a tough first five games, you know, and it's a good team. But, you know, I think that there's an argument to be made that they could lose all those games.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're like 11-6. I'm not going to get worked up over a 10-7 prediction for the Colts, though, with the Carson Wentz question mark.
Yeah. So I thought it was good. I thought you were going to object to 49ers, Jenny. So I prepared for that on the last one. But I think we're going to get a Trey Lance package that we haven't seen. I think it's going to be hard to defend. And I think it's going to make the second half of the year really fun. That'd be my that's my estimation. And one more quick story, speaking of the 49ers. So Ray Ratto is a writer based in the Bay Area. Has a radio show. They had me on last night to talk about my 49ers prediction, and he said, why do you do this? but in a way that, like, I think got to the heart of it, which is this is a stupid thing to do. And I said, well, you know, you should try to do this. And then he said, have you ever done this successfully? Because I'm trying to figure out, like who are you? And why are you doing this? And so it really put me into my place, made me feel pretty good. In general about everything, and you know, but we'll see. We got three teams dead on last year, another four teams within one game of the record, and then I think another couple within two. So I felt pretty good about it.
He needs to get more acquainted with the prognosticator.
oh boy. Well, we'll see. You know, this could be, you know, oracles have ups and downs just like everybody else.
All right. Well, we've got our official predictions coming next week. Well, thanks, Shelby. And we'll see you guys then. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Thanks, as always, to senior producer Dan Bloom, who listens to the show every week, just like you do. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, and Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.